Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 39. In today's episode, we'll talk about the mindset shift and strategies that are necessary when you're ready to take your freelance translation or interpreting business to the next level. Whether you aspire to make more money as a freelancer or you simply want to reach the stage where you're only working on ideal projects for ideal clients at ideal rates, you may find yourself with more questions than answers on how to get there. When possible, we like to step outside of our professional bubble and talk to guests in other fields, especially creative ones, to get their perspective and advice. So to discuss this topic with us today, we've invited a special guest, a six-figure freelance writer, coach, author, and fellow podcaster, Laura Briggs. Laura Briggs is a teacher turned entrepreneur. She has coached over 11,000 freelancers and is the author of How to Start Your Own Freelance Writing Business, which came out in 2019, and The Six-Figure Freelancer, published in 2020. Her third and fourth books will be released in 2022. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thanks for joining us, Laura. We both really enjoyed your interview on the Deliberate Freelancer podcast and have since become fans of your books and your own podcast, Advanced Freelancing, and we'll link to those in the show notes. So we felt that you would be an ideal guest to talk about some tips related to the subject of growing your freelance career, and that our colleagues and let's be honest, us too, could learn some mindset tips and smart habits that will help us take our freelance business to the next level. So let's jump right in. Can you tell our listeners about your business, what services you offer, what kind of clients you work with, and how you got started as a freelancer, and maybe a little bit about how your career evolved over time?
Sure. I got started in the summer of 2012. I Googled how to become a freelance writer. I was looking for a way to make some extra money and kind of went down a rabbit hole of research and learning different things and taught myself how to write for the search engine. So blogs and website content that help people rank their website on Google. And I did that as a side hustle for a year. I went full time in 2013 and stayed full time with it. And now I have kind of scaled my freelance business back down to a part-time kind of side hustle, but it is still a six-figure business doing that. And so it's been a really interesting evolution. I've run my company in a number of different ways. I mostly provide copywriting and content writing services primarily to law firms and those in the financial industry, but I've worked on all kinds of different projects. I've been a project manager for Microsoft and TrueCar, and I've been a content manager and all kinds of different things over the years. And that's one of the things I love about freelancing is you can try out different things. So today I even do some book marketing and book launch services for other authors who need support there.
Wow, that's amazing. I just love the diversity there and hearing about how you got started. So talking about these days, you know, how does your typical workday look like for you and what changes have you had to make because of the pandemic and the situation we're all in now?
Yeah, I feel really lucky with the pandemic because I think so many of us were already working remotely, building up our businesses. We saw the online trend. We saw remote working. We saw the need to have an online presence kind of years before other businesses had to pivot really quickly into it. So for me, one of the things I've actually seen is increased demand on both sides. So my business is about split between doing freelance projects for clients and then helping freelancers through courses, coaching, and then things like the books and the podcast. And I've seen a lot of people want to jump into freelancing. And I've also seen a lot of clients who have scaled up their online marketing efforts or who are doing it for the very first time, kind of because of the pandemic. So it's been interesting. The thing I like about freelancing is no 2 days look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I am very much a person who gets bored with monotony. So mm-hmm. I may do the same kinds of projects, but it's always for different clients or on different topics. So I spend a, you know, kind of some time doing research, connecting with clients, marketing, and then just doing the marketing for my coaching business. So that could be social media, going live, doing webinars, recording a podcast episode, doing all of the kind of like the publicity and the visibility things that keep that part of the business alive. And I think for me, like I have always had ADD since I was a little kid. I was diagnosed. And so for me, I think it actually plays into one of my strengths is that I like to be doing a lot of different things at once. And I think that that's why I love that my typical workday kind of never really looks the same.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. But I also think that, you know, Veronica mentioned this, it touches on a very good point that diversification is so important right now. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people saw that, especially in 2020. And so I like to hear about others who have such a diverse business and they are not just, you know, doing one thing for one type of client forever. Because I mean, that's not, you know, it's sustainable sometimes for a while, but there's always the other shoe could drop, you know, and you don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah, there's so many reasons to do that. I mean, what if artificial intelligence learns how to write SEO articles in the next 5 years and I'm put out of business, or my clients go under because of the pandemic and I'm not prepared with a backup service? Or even what I tell my freelancers all the time is, if you didn't have a passive income stream or a second income stream in 2020, now is the time to start it, right? Like, don't wait 5 years and be kicking yourself, because my main goal is, things are always going to happen in the world, in the economy, in your business, in your clients' businesses. Don't let any one thing take you to zero, whether it's a marketing method, you know, if you rely on Facebook groups, what if Facebook goes under or kicks you out? You've got to have a backup plan. You've got to have multiple sources of revenue and different services that you can pivot into or out of based on having to, or maybe you just get burned out or disinterested doing one.
I totally agree with that. I had an experience several years ago in my freelance business that I thought, I don't ever want to be in this position again. It just was like things seemed to happen all at once. I had a few really great anchor clients, and then one thing happened to one and one to another, and it was all at the same time. And I learned then that I had to diversify. And since then, it's been the best thing I've done for my business. So I totally agree with you. I think that's really important. So can you tell us a little bit about your books and your podcast? How did they come about, and what topics do you cover?
So I had always been interested in podcasting as a listener. It was definitely my favorite way to consume content. I spend so much of my day writing or reading words that I found it really hard to learn that way. And so I thought I need something different. So listening for me was a big way to pick up tips and things. And I like to take long walks. And at the time I was driving a lot. So it just made sense to listen to podcasts. And one of the reasons that I started a podcast is because I had so many people asking me for advice. And at first I would just be like, yeah, let's hop on a chat and talk for 30 minutes, or you can give me a call. And I quickly realized that was not sustainable, but it also wasn't getting helpful information into the hands of as many people as possible. So a podcast was a great way to provide consistent free resources for my audience, so that if there's someone else out there like me who wants to get started with freelancing and wants to hopefully avoid mistakes or just really get a sense of what it's like before they jump into it, there's always going to be an accessible resource. And I think of my books as the same way, because for less than $20, you can pick them up, read through them. And sometimes the result of reading one of the books is that you don't want to do this kind of business, or you don't want to scale. And I still feel like that's equally helpful, because I think we've all done things where maybe we wished earlier on someone had given us the advice of, hey, don't do this. This road isn't for you, or you might really end up loving it. So I'd always wanted to write a book. I've always been an avid reader. And so I was very intentional. I had a friend who is a very successful young adult author. And there was a conference about an hour from my house in Indiana at the time. And she had gone the year before and she said, hey, they're going to have live literary agents there from New York that you can pitch and get feedback. And she said, go do it. I bought the last ticket, got the last slot to pitch an agent, had no idea what I was doing. But I learned so much that weekend that it convinced me to go the route of writing a book proposal, getting an agent, publishing nonfiction. And so it was kind of a long process, but I was very intentional about wanting to write books and wanting to write multiple books. And that's a big reason why I chose the agent that I did, is that's what she was looking for too, is a client who kind of wanted to have a long-term career in publishing.
Wow. It's amazing how these things work out sometimes. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So switching topics a little bit, one of the things that we hear from our colleagues time and again is how hard it is to keep imposter syndrome at bay. We've done an episode on this. I believe you've done at least one on this. I'm a huge fan of your podcast, by the way. So I feel like, yeah, I do. I find myself sitting there going, yes, that's exactly right. Or, you know, give me ideas for my business that don't quite, they're not quite the same, but they relate to translation or something. But the issue of imposter syndrome among freelancers is really common. And you may want to project confidence with clients and expand your network, pursue new projects and grow your business. But at one time or another, everybody feels like maybe they don't deserve to succeed or that they don't belong or something, you know, along those lines. So do you have any tips on how to manage imposter syndrome?
Well, I do. So first of all, embrace that it's going to happen. And as someone once told me, real imposters don't have imposter syndrome. So the fact that you are having imposter syndrome means you are not a fraud, because it would never cross their mind to worry about it, right? So that was really helpful for me to think about.
Brilliant.
Right? So embrace that it's going to happen. I know for me that, like, what the week surrounding of the release of a book, I know I'm going to have imposter syndrome. So I always think about that too. Are there any big things coming up that could potentially trigger that lack of self-confidence, that feeling of being a fake or a fraud? And then try to have some things in your arsenal to trick your own brain out of it. So a big one for me is an evidence list. And I do it, and then I have my team do it for me. If we get a positive comment about my book, a good review, a student who took a course that gets a great result, someone who shares a win in a Facebook group after watching a webinar, a client who is happy, no matter what it is, we screenshot it and we put it into a folder. And that is what I go look at when I am feeling like things are not going well. It's visual direct evidence that says I'm not a total failure. And it really can help. Like, just reading that, you're like, you know what? This is going to be hard, but I'm trying to help other people. And I'm seeing direct evidence that what I'm doing is at least helping some people. And so I'm on the right path. So I think those are really important things to keep in mind. I mean, it's very normal to go through it. And I feel like every person who has done a big, scary thing has felt that at some point or another. So know that it's coming. Be prepared for it. Don't beat yourself up about it when it happens to you. My first book launch was just, I mean, I was a total disaster the whole 2 weeks before the book launch. For some reason, it didn't hit me until that point of, what if this isn't the right advice? What if this book is terrible?
Wow.
And so I knew the second book, I was like, yep, that's probably going to happen again. I'm going to question everything. So one of the things I built into that was involving other six-figure freelancers in the creation of the book, so that I had feedback earlier on and could maybe catch some of those things I might get nervous about. So there's all kinds of different ways that you can think about how, like, if my concern was that I wrote the wrong thing, why don't I interview 19 other people and make sure that we're all on the same page about these strategies? So you can always think about that too.
That's smart. Really smart. Yeah.
These are great tips, and I feel like they often come as an afterthought. Like, when I feel imposter syndrome rearing its ugly head, I'm always like, oh, I wish I had, you know. And then when I did start my own sort of, I call it the list of kind words, you know, from colleagues and clients, and I feel like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. It's really helpful.
Yes, absolutely. It's really powerful too. When you first start it, you know, challenge yourself to find, like, if you don't have direct evidence or screenshots from other people, challenge yourself to write down 20 things you're proud of that you've accomplished. It can be anything. And what I find is, when someone says that, they're like, oh, 20? I maybe can come up with 5. I found that once you get in the groove of it, it's very easy to come up with more than 20. And you've officially brought your brain into a positive mindset. You're telling it to hunt for good things. And it's so much easier to operate from that. Our brains are really good at finding negative things too. So you have to, like, tell it, oh, don't go down that road. Go the other way. Right now we're gathering pieces of information that are good.
Oh my gosh, that's so powerful and so easy, you know, even though it doesn't feel this way.
Right.
At the start. So what advice do you usually give freelancers who feel that they're ready to grow their business, whether it means diversifying, increasing their revenue, going from being a solopreneur to a business owner, but don't quite know where to start? How does one plan for growth mm-hmm. in their freelance business? And more importantly, how does one actually implement those plans?
Yeah, I think the very first thing is to start by know exactly where you are, what are the gaps that you have, and what are the things that you're doing really well. Because it is very possible to scale a business that isn't built the way you want it to be. Great example of this is if you've built a $30,000 or $50,000 a year business with the wrong clients, you may not, like subconsciously, you may not want to scale that to more money mm-hmm. because you have the wrong clients and you don't like working with them. And so, you know, secretly you're like, I don't want to market. I already have bad clients. So I don't want any more of those bad clients. Or this means I have to work twice as hard to make twice as much income. So be aware of that. I use a tool that I call the six-figure freelancer scorecard. And I ask people to take it. And it's kind of like based off of what a lot of successful advanced freelancers do and score themselves from 1 to 5. On like 5 different categories with a bunch of questions underneath. The point of that is to figure out what are the most painful things that are popping up. And I always look it over as a coach and go, okay, I'm calling your attention to these 3 things that jump out to me. Your business is built entirely on referrals. That's a problem. We've got to fix that if you're going to scale it. I also think the other piece of this is knowing your why. What is your reason? So for me, one of my first reasons was, well, I want to make 6 figures as a freelancer. I want to see if that's possible. And after a couple of years of doing that, the allure of it or the excitement or that being the primary drive lost its luster for me. I was just like, mm-hmm. I'm not motivated to do that, but I am super motivated to build a team of my own that employs other military spouses and gives them career opportunities. So if I can think about growing my business in the sense of what other people am I bringing on as contractors or employees in this business, we have more impact and I'm empowering other people in a group that I care about. So always think about your why, because I'm telling you the money may be good for the first year, but after that, you really need something bigger to hold on to. And I find that most advanced freelancers, it's not just about the money. They want to have the freedom to work 20 hours a week or take a 6-week vacation. Mm-hmm. And so that is what fuels them, and that will help them do the work that it takes to get there.
Yes.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's so good to hear. So shifting gears a little bit, freelancers often complain about the many unknowns that come with being a freelancer. We want to, you know, work in our own terms, but that means variable income, a lack of stability, clients coming and going, and having to continuously market and look for new projects, which many people hate. Yeah. What strategies would you recommend for dealing with these unknown factors and perhaps bringing some certainty to your freelancer's life?
Well, the number one piece of advice is going to be to provide a service that you can do on retainer. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people will say, well, I'm a website designer. I don't know how to do that. Or I'm a web developer. I don't, you know, most of mine are one-time projects. This doesn't mean that retainer work needs to be the core of your business, but you need to have something that brings in consistent revenue. So maybe it's a website maintenance package, or it's a quarterly audit and update of the design on their website and implementation of improvements, whatever it might be, because that helps you plan ahead. When I have clients on a retainer that have signed a 3, 6, or 12-month contract, I now know that I have that income banked mm-hmm. and it tells me exactly how much I do or don't need to market in the rest of the time. So look for something that you can provide on retainer, even if it's not the core, because just having those 1 or 2 things will give you a little bit of peace of mind and some stability. I think being clear about who you want to work for and working only for those clients is another way to add certainty. I think a lot of times the pressure we feel as freelancers is because we've priced wrong, we're selling the wrong product or the wrong package, or we've sold it to the wrong people. Now, the good news is all 3 of those things are in your control. You can change them at any point. So if you've made that mistake, shift it and get that certainty, because even there is always going to be uncertainty in being a business owner. But me waking up and going, man, my clients are awesome. Like, I love the books they write. I love the work they do. I am pumped to work on these projects. That gives me a level of certainty that I've done the right job in either recruiting or getting hired by these clients. And that kind of makes me feel better about some of the other things that are less certain.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I do some writing as well, and I am a translator, mm-hmm. and I do writing less than my translation work. But I always have found it interesting that in our industry, we don't see a lot of people working on retainer. And yeah. I would really like to see a shift to more of that. I know a few people, but I mean, I can count them on one hand. It's very few people. And I think that that's something that should be looked at in a way that, you know, it shouldn't be transactional. It should be more like a partnership.
Yeah. Takes some creative thinking, like an approach to pricing your services that way.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. So speaking of our field of work, choosing and sticking with a niche or specialization is an extremely important part of growing as a professional and getting better paying clients, more interesting projects, improving productivity and job satisfaction. What are your thoughts on specializing, and do you have any specific advice for freelancers about it?
I do, and I call this to niche or not to niche question, because you will find freelancers on one end of the spectrum or the other. And the good news is, I don't think there is a wrong answer, but there's two ways to niche: by project or by client type. And then you can also specialize by both of those things together, right? So don't feel like you only have to do one kind of project or only work with one kind of client. You can vary it up as much as you want to. I personally feel and have seen many positive benefits to specializing. Because not only do you make your own life easier, like I write for law firms. So that means I have to keep my finger on the pulse of one industry. It's my job to know SEO and things in the legal industry. That frees me up from feeling like I need to learn all the other things or read all the other news sites or whatever it might be. So it makes my own life easier. It also makes my clients' life easier because they know that I know what I'm doing. So they have more trust in me because it's something that I specifically do, and I'm not like a generalist. So it's also easier for me to convert them, because when they're looking for the legal content writer, I have a much better chance of being hired for that than someone just saying, in another industry, I need someone to write my website. I could easily be up against 200 other copywriters for that. And so I find that it's much easier to specialize, and it makes your clients appreciate you too, because they see you as an expert, right? So they're willing to pay expert rates. They want to treat you well. And I think over time, you also become an expert in their businesses. So I have one client that's had me on retainer for 9 years at this point. I know exactly what he does and does not want on his blog. And we get better content and better rankings for him because of that long-term relationship and because of the specialization, not just in the industry or in the content type or delivery type, but because I know his business so well. So I'm a big fan of it. You'll hear other people say you should never, ever, ever do it. Find the answer that works for you. But I do think if you find something you like, consider that as a possible niche, and you don't have to stick with one. You can have a few.
Yeah. And there is something to be said for working with specific clients for a long period of time. You really do get to know them. Mm-hmm. And I think I heard you say this on your podcast as well. You even get faster writing because it's sort of a rhythm that you've kept up with for quite some time.
Yeah. I even do, like, because I have so many clients in the legal industry, I can do all of their prep work together. So if I know that I have 6 blogs due next week, on Friday, I'm going to pick the titles for those 6 blogs, the keywords, pull my research links all together so that I can speed write it when it's time for me to sit down. So when you have things bundled together like that, and I'm only asking my brain, okay, pick titles, these are all legal blogs, it's all in the same vein. So I'm not tiring my brain out by asking it, okay, now we're going to write about weddings. And then over here is about pet care. And it's like, it's too much to keep track of. So for me, I like things to be simple, and I can build systems around it, right? That's really what helps you scale, are those systems.
Very important. That's true. Yeah. So we believe that work-life clarity, which is a term that we picked up from Melanie Paget Powers of the Deliberate Freelancer podcast, is an extremely important aspect for freelance language professionals, work-life clarity. What are your thoughts on this? And do you try to protect the boundaries between your work and personal life?
Yes, I think this is so important. Mm. There's an old saying out there about entrepreneurs will work 80 hours a week to avoid working someone else's 40. And that is true because your brain never shuts off. Mm-hmm. It is always thinking about your business on vacation, in the shower. I'll have an idea while I'm driving. I actually keep a hands-free phone that will record voice messages to myself, so because I know I'm going to get ideas while I'm driving. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something we know we have to work on. It's something that I struggled with a lot. So do try to create boundaries. One of the first ones that I created is I got a second line on my cell phone plan that was for business only. Only business apps are installed on it. It is the only number my clients have, and it gets turned off at 5 p.m. when I leave the office. Mm-hmm. For me, that was important because I felt like I started to hate my phone when I saw the business emails ticking up and up and up, or a client texting me or leaving a voicemail or whatever it was. And it also created those boundaries for my clients too, of what, when I would and wouldn't be available. Another one that I actually took this tip from Jason Fried, who's the founder and CEO of Basecamp. I asked him for his hacks when I interviewed him on a podcast. And he said one of his things is literally shut your computer down at night. And if you get the temptation to do something for work, do it on another device that's clunky to do it on. So my rule is I will close down my computer. And if I need to add something to my project management tool, ClickUp, I have to do it from my iPad, which is just annoying. So I have to really, really want to do it. And I have to type it out on the little iPad keyboard. And so that helps me really think through of like, is this worth it? Or should I just scribble a note and this can wait until tomorrow morning? My husband also used to complain that my entire house had become my office because I would move around with my laptop. And he's like, work has bled into every room of our house. So I also try to like literally have a ritual, close down my computer, close the office door at night. I don't come back in here until I'm working the next day, because it is hard. It's really hard when you have passion and drive for your clients or just for your business. So trying to build things intentionally. And pre-pandemic, I would even have appointments that I would specifically schedule that would force me to leave the house. So like going to go meet with a personal trainer, if I set that appointment at 5:30 or before work hours started, that was I actually had to leave the house to do that. I think you can still do that while you're being home, but just be specific about those boundaries, because it is every freelancer I know struggles with this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And even non-freelancers these days, people have to work from home.
Finally
realize that's a challenge.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So finally, we have a question that has to do with smart habits. You know, as the title of our podcast suggests, we love everything smart habit related. So we wanted to ask you what some of your smart habits are that you feel have been crucial for your business.
Yeah. So one is to create a consistent work environment, not just the physical space, but I use a tool called Focus at Will that plays music that helps you stay focused. And it also has a timer on it. So I can double things there by working in 25 or 50 minute Pomodoro chunks. And so for me, my brain is now trained that when I have my big headphones on and that music is playing, it's work time. And so that's really helped a lot. And also the ding in my ear when the timer is up is my reminder to get up and move around. So that's been a really important one for me. Doing even 5 minutes of meditation, if that's all I can handle for the day before the day, is important to me. I think that building that habit, it allows a sense of calm. I also not only close my computer and turn off the phone, but I use a tool called Boomerang and I pause my inbox. So it takes everything that comes into my inbox after hours and hides it in a separate folder. And whenever I press the button or at a set time, it will deliver all of that to my inbox. But what it's taken away from me is that desire to wake up and check my phone first thing in the morning and get anxiety about all the emails that are in there. So that's been another one that's been super helpful for me. And, you know, getting outside, doing something physical every day, even if it's just taking the dog for a 15-minute walk. I feel like a lot of the habits are non-work related, right? Because that's what helps prepare you to be focused and effective when you are working.
Brilliant. I love those.
Yeah, definitely. It is interesting how when we take care of ourselves, we can show up better for so many different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for these great tips, Laura. I mean, it has been really a pleasure to talk to you today. I've been telling Veronica about your podcast for a while now. So, So before we wrap up, we'd love it if you'd join us for a special segment that we like to call our guests' favorites. And in this segment, we ask our guests to share something about a favorite book, tool, or resource. So is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, one of my favorite authors is Mike Michalowicz, who is most famously known for writing Profit First. I am currently reading his book, Clockwork. As solopreneurs, this is really hard. And the whole premise of Clockwork is designing your business to run itself, or at least run itself as much as it can. And as a solopreneur, you do everything to start your business and to grow it. And so it's really hard to give up control. This has been a conversation with my online business manager for the last year. She pointed out to me this morning, she goes, "We're outsourcing your inbox. We're doing it." She's like, "You're ready." And I'm like, "No, I'm not ready. It's too complicated. We can never outsource that." So I'm reading this to try to like prepare me to delegate even more in my business, because I think sometimes you fall into this trap of thinking you have to do everything yourself, and you really don't. You may need to do certain things, right? Like, I do need to do my client work or do my one-on-one coaching with clients, but I don't need to send the email newsletter. I probably don't need to check every email in my inbox. So I love Mike's work, and Clockwork is really great at kind of building that confidence that this is possible.
I'm going to check that one out. I haven't read that one of his.
Yeah. It's good. Cool. He's good.
Thanks.
Awesome. We'll link that in the show notes too. Laura, thank you so much again for joining us today. It was such a pleasure. We really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm sure that our listeners will find your tips useful as well in their own freelance businesses. And to our listeners, Laura has generously offered to share a free copy of the first two chapters of The Six-Figure Freelancer, and we'll list the link in our show notes as well. So thanks, Laura. Before we go, where can our colleagues learn more about you or find you online?
Yeah, you can check out my website, which is betterbizacademy.com, and you'll find information about my books and the podcast there as well. And I'm also pretty active in my Facebook group, which is called Mastering Your Freelance Life with Laura. So feel free to join.
Wonderful. Yes, thanks for joining us. And we will definitely add those links to our show notes. And that's it for this episode. Next week, our email subscribers will get a summary of the episode, including the links to all the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving our emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you like this episode, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. Please share it with your colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This only takes a minute, and we have recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to it in the show notes as well.
Talk to you soon. We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.